Remakers Mark, Episode 26, Modern Times. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Remakers Mark. Here we are in Episode 26, where we are discussing modern times. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And are you a Charlie Chaplin guy or a Buster Keaton guy?
I am very well, and I'm a Chaplin. Bless you, my son.
Very good. Good, thank you. You took the joke right out of my mouth. All right, and Jeremy Nilsson, how are you doing tonight? And are you a Chaplin guy or a Keaton guy?
I'm doing fantastic, and I have always considered myself more of a Keaton head.
Gotcha.
Or Keatonite. Right.
A Keatonite. I like it. Now, you realize we're not referring to Michael Keaton, correct?
Or Alex P. Keaton.
Correct.
I'll keep my answer the same.
Okay. Fair enough. Good on you. Lee Hamstring, how are you doing tonight? And Chaplin or Keaton for you?
I'm doing all right, and always Keaton.
Wow. Interesting.
Yep. Barry's Chaplin, in my opinion.
But wow.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. We might get to that later on. We shall see. Mark Josting, how are you? And how about Chaplin or Keaton for you?
I'm well, thank you. And I have to abstain. I just haven't seen enough Buster Keaton. But I have enjoyed the Chaplin that I've seen very much.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I am Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host again this fine evening. And I am pretty much in the same place. I've seen lots of clips of both. But this is actually the first movie of either of theirs that I saw, so I'm not quite ashamed. I'm nearly ashamed of that, but what can you do? You know, haven't seen too many silent movies, but you know, this was a good experience, so I would say it'll probably expand my horizons to try some different things and try some more of those. Maybe the next one will be a Keaton. What Keaton would you recommend? Is it The General? Is that
definitely The General?
Okay,
that one's very highly regarded.
That's kind of the not the pinnacle, but the most widely known and most popular.
Okay.
It would be the equivalent to Modern Times, I would say.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'll do it. Deal. Before we move on to our discussion of Modern Times, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics presents Goofta, a concert of novelty songs performed by Minnesota artists, November 8th at Amsterdam Bar and Hall. Your favorite local musicians perform covers of well-loved novelty songs, including Tom Lehrer, Monty Python, Weird Al, TV themes, and more. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right, thanks again to Modern Antics. Now, let's move on to a summary of the film and our history with it. Andy, do you want to take us there?
Yes, I would. Modern Times is a 1936 comedy starring, written, scored, and directed by Charlie Chaplin, in which his iconic Little Tramp character struggles to survive in the modern industrialized world. The film is a comment on the desperate employment and fiscal conditions many people face during the Great Depression, conditions created, in Chaplin's view, by the efficiencies of modern industrialization. In terms of history of this group with this film, I think was pretty minimal. Some friends of ours had given my wife and I the copy of this movie kind of out of the blue, which I thought was a little strange at the time, but they said it was, you know, they praised it very highly, and I trusted their opinion. So I watched it once and immediately fell in love with it. This was a movie that I think the artistry, the scope and imagination of a movie, especially one from this time that I really wasn't familiar with a lot of movies from this era, really just astounded me. And Charlie Chaplin, his ability to, I should just say, the force of his own personal character and the presence and the power that it had on this movie was pretty astounding to me. So that's my experience. And now we'll turn it over to everybody else.
And silence.
Molly and I actually just watched this, and I needed to watch it for the podcast, obviously. And so she was watching something else, and I said, I feel bad for asking, but can I use the TV to watch an old silent Charlie Chaplin movie? And she's like, yeah. And we sat and watched it, and 20 minutes in, she's like, this is really, really good.
Yeah.
That's kind of a similar reaction to what I had, that it really surprised me from the get-go in terms of how good of a story this was. And
yeah,
I think my own experience with movies from this era, which is, you know, erroneous, but has to do, I think, with a lot of spoofs from other movies, kind of remarking
Three Amigos.
Like Three Amigos. That's actually a good example. Or Singing in the Rain, some of the opening sequences in that, where they're comedic and buffoonish in terms of how kind of silly it is, which I think a lot of the silent movies from that era probably were, because the movie industry was kind of figuring itself out. But this movie is comedic, but there's a I don't know, gravitas is not the right word, but there's something else to it that just kind of makes you sit up and take notice, I think.
Yeah, there's a certain magic in it.
Hmm. Indeed. Well, I think we'll talk a little bit about that, about how the silent film affected us, how we would want that to look in a remake in part two. So we've got that coming up in a couple of weeks here after this recording. But for now, in part one, as usual, we're going to be doing our recasting of the film. So we've got two major characters and three minor characters. The first major character is that of a Gammon. Lee, tell us about that character.
By the way, it's Gammon.
A Gammon? Sorry. Neil Gaiman is in this movie, is what I'm trying to say.
Originally played by Paulette Goddard. I believe that's how you pronounce her name.
Mm-hmm.
Her actual name is Ellen Peterson, the character that is. She's a survivor, the recipient of some unfortunate luck, and the factory worker's love interest. Circumstances have her falling in love with him as they both struggle to find their way out of destitution. My pick for this one, I guess, was, you know, the word survivor was sort of stuck out in my head. You know, she does some questionable things, but just as a means of getting by. And I immediately thought of Emily Kinney, who I think people know as Beth from The Walking Dead.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I think, and that's really the only thing that I know her from. But I, the episodes that I've seen with her in it, she's really good. She does a fantastic job of playing a survivor in that. And I thought that she had the right look and the right mannerisms and physicality for a role like this.
Nice. That's a good pick. I like that a lot. Yes, I've been impressed with her throughout Walking Dead. And she's grown quite a bit. I mean, she's not young, but she's,
no. she's
grown up on stage a bit.
Yeah, she looks like she's still a teenager, but she's 29. So,
yeah.
And an accomplished singer, too.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, well, she sang a few times in the show. But she is, I believe she's a recording artist prior to being an actress, if I remember reading up on her right. But huh, yeah, interesting. But she is a functioning, touring, recording musical artist. And she has a phenomenal voice. I love her songs in the show.
Yeah, I do too.
Yep, agreed. It never feels, I mean, it feels tacked on a little bit, but it always is very moving and very genuine and very emotional. So yeah, I agree. Sometimes when people add songs to shows, I really cringe. Like it feels very forced, and The Walking Dead somehow it's avoided that. So good on them for that.
Yeah. But moving on to Andy, I'm curious to hear who he picked.
Before we do so, I just want to jump in and say, Lee, your tone tonight is extraordinary. I know you feel crappy, but I just want to say I know you're sick, and I appreciate you being here. And you sound amazing. You got your Barry White on, and it's extraordinary.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Nice.
You
nice
are
work.
Smoky and smooth and beautiful.
Yes.
In indeed. A world.
Oh, yeah. Nice, man. That was awesome. Good work,
man.
Nice. Yeah.
Right. That will be our intro.
Sorry to jump in there.
Fine, Andy. I just wanted to
I just wanted to recognize that.
Where there is no sound.
Nice. All right, Andy, sorry about that. Go ahead.
I struggled a lot with this pick. I had about four or five actresses going through my head, each one kind of thinking that they were equally good, but not great, or there was something else about them that either we had chosen them too many times, in my opinion, and I was getting a little bit sick of bringing them up in the podcast. Alison Brie. So I ended up going with... Sorry.
Never.
Chose her. She would be great, but I need...
She would have been great in this role.
She needs, to quote Film Spotting, she needs to go in the penalty box for a little while. I chose Amber Tamblyn for this role. And I will admit I have very little experience with Amber Tamblyn specifically, but I chose her specifically to go with my pick for a factory worker. So it will make more sense later. But she is, I think looking at pictures of her, I mean, she's been in a lot of really interesting stuff. She's been in 127 Hours. She was in Django, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, if that's your thing. But she's a beautiful, kind of looks like a spunky girl. I think that she would play that well in this role, which I think is what how the character was originally played and probably requires a lot of in this movie is definitely some piss and vinegar. Pardon my French. So that's my choice. Miss Amber nice. Tamblyn.
Good one.
I like it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I recognize her and I know who she is, but I can't think of a specific role, but not in the bad way. I think she's an accomplished actress for sure. I just don't have a compass point for her. But yeah, I like it. She definitely has the look.
Mm-hmm.
Andy and Lee, were you guys casting your roles as in a silent film?
Yes.
Yes.
I was.
Okay.
I guess I hadn't really considered it any other way.
Got it.
Yeah.
By the way, Andy phrased his intro of her, I think I know who he picked for the factory worker.
Probably you. We'll get to that later. Mark, who did you choose for a gammon?
Well, for this particular gammon, I chose Ellie Kemper. And
nice.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Not bad.
Yeah, I really like her expressiveness. I really like her physicality. And it's not like she's super energetic and frenetic in her physical acting, but I think she just has a really nice presence, and I think that she does subtle character acting, subtle but very convincing. And so I just really see her in this role very strongly.
I take a little bit of umbrage only, and I'll take a lot of blame for it too, because I've only really known her from her roles in The Office or Bridesmaids.
I think that should be enough.
But I don't see in those roles. I think in The Office especially, she's ditzy is maybe too strong of a word, but she's a little bit of a passive character, like a reactive character instead of a proactive character, if that makes sense.
I think ditzy could be an appropriate word for a character, Aaron from The Office.
Yeah, but I think that this character in Modern Times needs to be a more proactive character. So I guess I don't feel like I've seen that in the roles that she's played, but I certainly haven't seen everything she's done.
All right, well, I'm gonna put that on your ignorance, Andy, because
ooh, nice.
You know, I have some experience of her earlier stuff with like sketch comedy groups, and okay. And she's done some more just sharp characters, and I think that's something that she can do very, very well. It's just she hasn't been cast as that lately,
mm-hmm.
and probably yeah. won't be.
Yeah, she did a wits or two in L.A. that she was much much more feisty than I was expecting her to be. In those, not like I was expecting her to be passive, but she was like really like laughing like crazy and nah, not breaking character, but just had like a really, really strong energy. So yeah, I'm with you there, Mark.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on to Jer.
Indeed. I went on a similar, very similar, vein as Lee, and I went with Lauren Cohan, also from the TV show The Walking Dead.
Yeah. As Maggie.
She plays the love interest of Glenn, Maggie Green. I was looking for somebody that had a good repertoire of facial acting, because I think that in the silent film era, you've got people like Charlie Chaplin who can make their entire body act, and then you have people that act with their faces, and I think that this role did a lot of that, although she was the original actress was very physically gifted as far as acting is concerned as well, and was able to use that to a certain degree. But I wanted somebody that not only looked really pretty, but also looked really pretty disheveled, which Lauren Cohan does exceptionally well. And yep. I also wanted somebody that had a wide range of ability to act in a broad way in a small space, and that by that I mean with facial interactions and gestures and things like that, and I think that she would do very well with that.
I would say of all the actresses that we've picked so far, her, just by looking at the pictures, I'm not a Walking Dead fan. I haven't really seen any bit of it, so I can't use that as a reference point, but just by looking at the pictures of her and looking at her face, that she is the closest thing so far to the original actress.
Yeah, agreed.
And your point to a facial actress is very accurate, because her role compared to Charlie Chaplin's character, where he was very physical with his entire body, she had a much more limited, you know, range in which she could use. You know, that was just the way her character was written. So I think you're right that that's a very important aspect to it, is the the facial expressiveness.
Yeah, a lot of what she was doing was either being incredibly joyous or incredibly sad. And I mean, there was a lot of, you know, stealing bananas and then, you know, chucking them to the kids or 10 feet over their head. And then kind of enjoying that little moment or enjoying their little conversation about how they're going to live in a big, great house and have this great life. But then there was also those moments of dealing with having to steal bread and that kind of thing. And so she didn't have the physical comedy pieces that Charlie Chaplin did, but she had a lot of physicality to her role that generally was very muted as compared to him, but was still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was still there quite a bit, yep. Especially in the scenes that Jerry mentioned with the stealing the fruit at the very beginning, or the scene inside of the department store where the factory worker is skating around blindfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost falling off the edge every time.
Man, I love that scene.
That scene still blows my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea how he pulled that off, but...
I do, but I'm not going to tell you.
It had quite a bit of physicality to it in that scene. And I would say most of the department store scenes.
Yep.
And certainly when she's a cafe singer and dancer at the end.
Yep.
So, yeah, suck it, Andy.
And Jared, just tying back to your, like, all joy, all sadness, or showing great degrees of joy or sadness. I mean, that's pretty much The Walking Dead in a nutshell. A lot of sadness, moments of joy that are incredibly high. So, I mean, like, she demonstrates that week in, week out in that show. So, yeah, that's a great, yep. great reference point.
Grazie.
Yeah, de nada. Prego.
And now I turn it over to you, Mr. Kyle.
Oh, thank you. Yes, excellent. Quite. So I wanted someone, I looked solely at someone's face, or I thought solely about the face of the person that I wanted for this. And I had a really hard time picking both of these characters. This one a little bit less so. Kind of bounced around a little bit, but I landed on Kaley Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory.
Hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of that show. I don't suffer laugh tracks well, so that is really, really hard for me. But I think she is a very interesting actress, and I think she can be expressive and can be very interesting. And I think, you know, the role has a sweetness to it, but you have to feel like she's kind of been through a lot at the same time. I don't know if I feel as much of her having been through a lot, although I think, you know, with some good kind of dirty makeup maybe, but I just really like her in those scenes of just having that over-expressive face and kind of that big smile, and, you know, someone that the tramp could fall in love with upon seeing them for the first time, kind of doing that good deed for the kids. So yeah, Kaley Cuoco is who I ended up with.
I'm not convinced that that her physical acting could cut it in a silent film, but I do like her expressiveness. I think that focusing on her face would really help her out in this remake.
I gotcha. I can read between the lines here. I gotcha.
Ouch.
That's all right. No, it's fair. It's fair. It's just all close-ups all the time.
I've seen a lot of The Big Bang Theory, which is basically her resume point. And it's just my critique of her. I'm not convinced that she's a great actress, but I am convinced that she's a very funny actress and a very expressive one.
Yeah, and that's what I was looking for. You got it. Exactly. See, he justified it for me. Nice. All right. So for the role of a Gammon, not a Gaiman, not Neil Gaiman, a Gammon, originally played by Paulette Goddard, Lee went with Emily Kinney, Andy went with Amber Tamblyn, Mark went with Ellie Kemper, Jer went with Lauren Cohen, and I went with Kaley Cuoco. Up next is a factory worker. Andy, tell us about the factory worker.
Not the factory worker.
Pardon me.
Singular factory worker.
Yep.
A factory worker, or Chaplin's character of the Little Tramp, is a small cog in the modern industrialized world, and he doesn't quite fit in. While he gets himself into many jams, including accidentally leading a communist workers' march, being mistaken for smuggling nose powder, and being the worst night watchman in history, he has an uncanny ability to get out of trouble and survive another day. This character... and the performance by Charlie Chaplin in this one is really what makes this movie so amazing. We touched on a lot of the things already, and this one was a really hard one for me to choose. And I like my choice. Don't get me wrong. I think he will turn in a daggum good performance, but filming Charlie Chaplin's shoes is especially when he's a little tramp and those shoes are extra large. Anyway, sorry. That was a bad joke. I chose David Cross. So,
nice.
Referencing my earlier pick of a gammon, Amber Tamblyn is David Cross's wife. They have a similar age difference than, I believe, Charlie Chaplin and Paulette Goddard, who were married in real life.
Good for Charlie Chaplin.
He was also married, what, 4 times, I think, before he died. She was wife number 2, I think.
Okay.
Anywho, so they're married in real life. I think they could use that chemistry to their benefit on stage. David Cross, I think, is probably most well known for 2 things, being an incredibly dry comic, and he's really, really funny at that. And then Tobias Funke, and he's really funny in that. And I think those two characters are very different from each other. Tobias was a very paranoid, you know, lacked self-confidence, but was still kind of over-energized character. And there's a few scenes in Arrested Development specifically that I think show that there's a physicality to David Cross's performance that I would love to see him channel. And especially if you speed up the recording, as was done in the original, 50%, that would make the performance even nuttier. So David Cross is my choice to play a factory worker, not the factory worker.
Nice. I like it. I mean, I love him. I think he is unbelievably funny. This is going to be really, really weird. Charlie Chaplin, to me, is a... Oh, man, I'm trying to think of how to say this. David Cross reminds me of Goofy, like the Disney character Goofy, the way that he ambles about. And I don't see an overlap between Goofy and Charlie Chaplin, just in the way he moves. Now, maybe he has his own identity for this character, but I would have such a hard time separating those two that his style of movement is much more sort of loose than Chaplin was.
Yes.
Now, I don't think David Cross can't do that necessarily, but the way that he tends to move is more Goofy-like in my mind. So, yeah,
no, That's a fair point. I think that his depictions that you've probably seen have been sloppier. And I think Chaplin's, if you think about it, the physical comedy, we're going to get into this later, but Chaplin's performance is so physical, like it had to be choreographed so closely in almost every single scene. And so his movements are very, while they seem out of control and overly paced, but they're all incredibly planned out with so many other actors around to make sure that this goes just so, that it really is a very well choreographed movie. A remake would require that exact same thing. So I would take a little bit of the onus off of David Cross and put it on a director / choreographer to make that happen and make the actors work in the way that had to be done in the mid-30s. So, but I see your point. I'll take your point.
Thank you.
I will dismiss it out of hand, but I will take it.
Thank you for understanding my goofy ramblings. Mm. I appreciate
it. I think one of the other things too is that we're not trying to find somebody to be recast as Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
Impossible. We're finding somebody to, exactly, unless you're Robert Downey Jr. But we're looking for somebody to be recast as the factory worker.
Factory worker.
That's all I had to say.
Kyle, who you got?
Well, I had a really hard time picking this one, but I feel strongly about who I ended up with. To me, Charlie Chaplin is... his acting style is all tics. And I say that in a very complimentary way. At the beginning of the movie, when he's in the factory and he's kind of good, he's got those motions that he has to do repeatedly. In that case, it's a very literal thing. He can't stop making those motions of kind of like tightening the screws on the cogs, what have you. And then later on, you know, throughout the movie, he just kind of has those, the way that he walks and the way that he moves and the face and kind of the nose scrunch by the mustache. And I wanted to think of somebody that kind of had that same style of acting sort of day in, day out. And I landed on Martin Freeman for this. And another piece of inspiration was how he walks as a hobbit. So Charlie Chaplin wore those big kind of clown shoes. Like, I don't think they were quite clown shoe size, but they were definitely oversized. And I was thinking, Andy, while you were talking about how like casting choices or wardrobe choices, or in this case, kind of appliance choices, I guess, can inform the role. Like thinking of Marlon Brando in The Godfather, you know, he had cotton in his mouth. And so that informed how he spoke. And that became such an iconic thing. And it's the same thing with Chaplin. Like, there's no way for him to walk normally wearing those shoes, you know, to walk like a normal human being. you know, maybe he had the walk and decided to add the shoes to it. I don't know what kind of the order was, but essentially the two informed each other. And so I think that thinking of how Freeman walks as a hobbit informed that to me, like he kind of has that amble about. I mean, you know, the Hobbits movies are action movies, and I don't love his Bilbo, but I think I don't love it because I don't love the direction the movies have been taken as much. I do think he's a really good Bilbo. I just don't love the direction he's been given as Bilbo, kind of. But yeah, I think he's a very ticky actor. And I think his face is really good, but he can also be subdued, but have that physicality and sort of have that like curiosity. To me, the tramp is a very curious character with everything going around him. He has to be both curious and clueless, and Freeman does that really, really well.
Yeah, totally.
I agree. I see a lot of, I guess, a little bit of Charlie Chaplin's essence in the way Martin Freeman moves.
Yeah.
Just like watching him in Sherlock.
I was just going to say, some of his movements in Sherlock are almost that way a little bit, especially in some of the earlier episodes when he, or the, is it the pilot where he still has a cane and a limp?
Yep.
Yeah. He almost kind of waddles like that.
He's less self-assured in those. Yeah, totally.
That's a great pick.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think the things that make me not like him as Bilbo are the things that would make him a good Charlie Chaplin or a good, totally negated my previous point. That would make him a good the factory worker.
Gotcha.
A factory worker.
Nice. We found our meme. Good job, guys. Nice. So, Jer, on to you. Who did you pick for a factory worker?
Well, I was having a difficult time, and I wanted to find somebody that I felt had a good physical presence, was willing to do the things that physical comedy and the amazing choreography that would be involved in a role like this would be willing to do and work on and try. So I wanted somebody that I liked their physical presence and had a bit of a more stage theater background, because I think a lot of those skills probably would come into play more so than their film skills or history. So I went with Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
He was my second choice.
Yeah. Yep. He was really close for me.
I think that he's got a great face. He makes great large facial gestures. And I think that just from a physical standpoint, I think that he would be able to do a lot of the things that would be asked of him to be funny in this context.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I really considered him very, very closely. I think he was probably my second or third pick. Yeah, I think that's a great one.
And Mark, who did you pick?
Well, I too was looking for somebody with that stage actor sort of presence. And I came up with one name and never deviated from it. And that name is Stanley Tucci.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have Umbridge?
Not yet. Okay. I'm curious to see where he's going to go with this.
Well, I think he's a consummate actor. He's very funny. He has excellent physical presence. And I think that he could do an astounding Charlie Chaplin impression. But I also think that he could just be funny in his own right.
Yeah, I agree. He's a hell of an actor, for sure. He would embody the spirit of Chaplin as much or maybe more so than anybody here. I like that a lot. I think that's a great pick. I just love him. I think he's fantastic.
I do too. I think he can, as we've said before, he can do anything. So
yeah, he totally can. And somehow didn't make our versatile actor special episode.
Yeah, I could see him being in a part due. I could see him being in a future one.
He does comedy really, really well, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't expect that from him.
No, he does a lot of drama, but the comedies in which he has appeared, he's been excellent.
Yep. I love that his kind of resurgence has been in the Hunger Games movies, where his character is so, I mean, it's hard to say like so unlike anything he's ever done, because he's done a million different things, but it's just such a unique character, even for his sort of oeuvre. Yes.
Nailed it.
For his craft, you mean?
Sure. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Oeuvre. W-A-U-S-A-U. Oeuvre.
Like it's Polish? No. Just kidding.
I think that his diminutive stature would also serve him well in the oversized Little Tramp clothing. I have no idea how tall Charlie Chaplin actually was, but I always got the impression that he wasn't very tall. But
he, Chaplin was 5'7".
Okay, well, yeah, average height.
And Stanley Tucci is 5'8".
Ooh, a giant among men. but I think that that size, especially relative to probably other actors that would be in the movie, would serve him well. So that's a good pick.
I think especially, you know, standing next to somebody named Big Bill, like, you know, being a smallish person, you know, definitely helps. Anyway, that is my pick, Stanley Tucci. Let's move on to Lee.
Well, my pick is going to be a little off the wall here, but I'll try to explain it as best I can. I went with Michael Fassbender, and the reasoning, the reasoning was because of the most recent thing that I saw him in, a little independent movie called Frank.
Nice.
I don't know if anyone else saw it, but
I didn't. I've seen the trailer a couple times, but I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, it's an unusual movie, and it's he spends, I would say, 95% of the movie under that gigantic head.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
And you don't, you know, it's you can't really tell it's him except for there's one scene where he briefly speaks German. You can kind of hear his Inglourious Bastards accent in that, but
it's weird. I saw another movie of his where he spent only one scene out of a mask. That one was a horror movie, but
what was that?
I forget what it was called. He played a Nazi officer who had gained immortality through black magic.
Wow,
it was a pretty good movie.
I cannot. I know what you're talking about. I cannot remember the name either.
I was not familiar with that one.
But yeah, that one he spent most of the movie with his face in a like wrapped up in bandages. So does he have a penchant for that sort of thing?
I don't know.
For such a pretty man, that's surprising.
Well, yeah, and like most handsome. Of his roles is I think have been taking advantage of his looks a bit. And in the movie Frank, he had to rely on a lot of other stuff to get his point across. So that to me was, I think, a growing point for him. Like I saw him, I guess, expand his horizons a bit with that role. And I'm not a huge fan of the movie, but I really liked his performance in it. So that's why I picked him for this one.
You know what else he was in, Lee?
Oh, a little miniseries.
little something Brother. Something. Rhymes with Schmand of Schmothers. Yep.
Isn't that a story about the Smothers Brothers?
Yes. Yes.
10-part miniseries.
Yep. He played the yo-yo.
Yes,
was he the did. Movie Blood Creek? Was that?
That's the one.
Wow.
When did that come
Interesting.
Out?
2009. Really? Joel Schumacher. Wow. I hate Joel Schumacher.
2009? That recent?
It's,
yeah.
I think it's a pretty good movie. Like,
all right. Yeah. I'll give it a shot. The poster looks terrifying, so it's got me there.
Eesh.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, that was my pick, Michael Fassbender.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, it would be a very tall, lean tramp. But
the Big Bill would have to be enormous.
It's true.
Lee, can you say
enormous Bill?
Lee, can you say your pick one more time in your In a World voice?
Michael Fassbender.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's it. I have goosebumps.
That's a winning tone right there.
Do it again. Do it again.
Good work. All right. So for a factory worker, originally played by Charlie Chaplin, we picked David Cross. I picked Martin Freeman. Jared picked Neil Patrick Harris. Mark picked Stanley Tucci. And Lee went with Michael Fassbender. So that's it for the major roles. Now we are on to the minor roles, the first of which is Big Bill. Mark, tell us about Big Bill.
Well, Big Bill is big. So big, in fact, that he was deemed big enough to be nicknamed Big by a sufficient number of people for the name Big Bill to be popularized. He's also a factory worker. Big was probably not the character's real name, and he was originally portrayed by Tiny Sanford, which is probably not the actor's real name, and is much like the name Big, except for more ironic and less literal.
That's a great description.
This is a beautiful Thank summary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for my pick for Big Bill is a little bit left field, but not actually left field because it's an offensive position. And then my pick is Peyton Manning.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes,
has he
yes,
acted
yes.
before, Mark, that you're aware of?
I have not.
He hosted Saturday Night Live once.
He did do that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. He did that. He's been in a ton of commercials for a lot of different things, including yes, Papa John's, but I think Sony, well, some electronics company, but yeah, he is always funny. I think he's definitely got the showmanship in him. I think that he's been on the screen enough to prove that he can act. So
certainly enough for Big Bill.
Certainly yeah. enough for Big Bill. And
it's true.
And also he is big. He's he's 6'5" and I don't know, IMDb doesn't list people's weights.
He's big. He's a big
ESPN is for.
Yeah, yep. He's big. And yeah. and muscly. So I think kind of went to
So he's going to go like the Alex Karras route once he retires?
Who's Alex Karras?
Oh my gosh, you just said who's Alex Karras?
I did. Do you want me to say it again? Lee, will you say who is Alex Karras in your voice, please?
Who is Alex Karras?
Yep, that's the one.
Anyone ever see a little show called Webster?
Yeah. Oh, the dad?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's George Papadopoulos.
Yes. Anyone ever watch a little movie called Blazing Saddles?
He was wow. Mongo. Yeah. All right. That's I'm sufficiently shamed.
He also happened to be a professional football player prior to those things.
I didn't know that
part. I knew that, but I didn't know his name. I knew all that information, but I just didn't remember his name.
Let's say that he's going the Cam Neely route after he's done with Cam football. Neely.
Who's Alex Karras? nice. Good pick, Mark. I like it. Yeah. Good left field.
Thanks.
You really hit a touchdown with
good
that
good sports one. Ball reference.
Yes, I totally scored a goal unit. Jerry, you're up next.
Yes, I am. I am recasting The Mechanic. The Mechanic becomes the factory worker supervisor after the strike when they are tasked with getting the ancient gears of the factory back up and running. The Mechanic, like a mechanic, wears overalls and uses wrenches. He's also unfazed by getting tossed into the gears of an oversized machine and ending up on a conveyor belt. So unfazed, in fact, that he just eats his lunch in the gears of a giant machine.
Yep.
Yeah. Is it strange how many people get rung through the gears of that machine and don't get, you know, squished into stew?
Yeah. Those are maybe the safest gears in the history of ever.
And what do they do?
OSHA had a big influence on this movie.
It's true.
For The Mechanic, I chose a character actor named Richard Reel. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. You will first say, who? And then you'll look at his picture and you will say, oh, that guy. Because he is one of those that guys. He's in everything. In fact, if you look at his IMDb page, there are 15 to 20 movies in post-production right now that he's in.
He's a busy, oh my God. He's a busy man.
Very literally.
It's unreal.
Wow. He is a classic character actor. He plays sort of the big, doofy, mustachioed person.
He's like Dennis
well.
Franz's stunt double.
I think he's got, what's that?
He's like Dennis Franz's stunt double.
He's like Dennis Franz's uncle stunt double.
Yeah.
But one, if you look at some of his comedy roles, he embodies a lot of the same big man humor that Chris Farley used to have.
Yeah,
in my opinion, and but he's got a great physical presence to him, and I think that he would be a fantastically perfect fit for somebody that's going to be rung through the gears of a giant machine and have soup fed to him through an oil funnel and so on and so on.
Yeah, but that's a good call,
Richard Reel. Everyone, Richard.
Yeah. So he's the guy in Office Space who gets in the accident and wins the settlement and
yep,
the jump to conclusions, yes. Matt.
Yep.
His IMDb page just goes on for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He also played kind of a scumbag security guard in The Fugitive.
He's got right. He did, that's right. He has like 6 or 7 movies per year.
Yep. At least. Well, he's probably on set for 2 days.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. He only is in like one scene of each of those movies. So
he works a total of 2 weeks a year.
He also played, I forget the name of the character, but the head of, I think, Ford in the Drunk History episode about Ralph Nader, which it's pretty funny.
Awesome.
So that's my
I'll
pick.
I'll try to link that in the show notes.
Yeah, it's that's.
He can range from Star Trek Voyager to Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. That's range right there.
That is range.
If there were a career awesome. In Hollywood that I could choose, I would take Richard Reel's
career. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes.
I don't need to be Robert Downey Jr. I just want to be Richard Reel.
Nice.
On that note, Kyle, it is now on to you.
Thank you. So my minor character is the president of the Electro Steel Corp, who represents all that is evil about the industrialized world. Non-stop production at all speeds, worker health and satisfaction be damned. Also, you can hear his voice, which is really weird and disorienting in a silent movie. I think I talked about this when we did pre-production, but when I put the DVD in, I got it from Netflix, and it was the Criterion Collection. And oftentimes with the Criterion Collection, you know, they have a very nicely restored original version, but then they'll have lots of really good special features, lots of different stuff to kind of add to the movie. And so, like, you hear his voice maybe a minute and a half in, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I thought this was a silent movie. I had no idea that there were some voices in it. So I was like flipping through audio tracks. I was like, did I get a broken DVD? Like, why does it have voices? I didn't know what was going on. Then I looked it up, and I looked at IMDb and like the trivia area, and it talked about how it was, you know, at the tail end of silent movies, and it wasn't entirely silent. Some of the you know, workers had voices, or some of the leadership, I don't know, had voices, including this guy. So it was just very weird. But man, did that throw me for a loop. Whew. So I wanted somebody that basically just had an imposing presence, and that had a very powerful, imposing voice. So I went with David Strathairn.
Nice.
You will know him probably first and foremost from Good Night and Good Luck. He's been in a whole slew of movies. He's in the Bourne movies as well. He's just a very imposing leadership guy actor. He's a very good actor, but he just plays that role extraordinarily well. He was in the recent Godzilla as well. So, yeah. And Lincoln, I think, too, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
He was William Seward's Folly. Yep. So, yeah, I just think he's great. I think he's a really good actor. He's one of those that after I saw him in Good Night and Good Luck, now I go to movies that were, you know, maybe 5, 6, 10 years before that. And it's like, oh, it's that guy. Hey, it's David Strathairn. You know, it's like you didn't see him at all until you saw him in a really excellent starring role. And then you see him all over the place. Mm-hmm. So, yep, he's good.
He's another great that guy character actor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Akin to Stanley Tucci, and that, you know, he's kind of a chameleon. My favorite performance of his is LA Confidential. He plays sort of a high class pimp in a way.
Huh. And gotcha. I need to see that again. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
He's really good in that.
Nice. All right, so that wraps up our minor character picks, and with that, this first episode of Modern Times on Remaker's Mark. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. We recently added a new show called XOXOJK featuring Kate O'Reilly and Jen Schall. Kind of talks about the goings-on of Twitter and Facebook, and then they do some deep dives on some really interesting topics, so I would definitely recommend checking that out. So just look for that on the mathishard.net homepage. You can find show notes for this episode and other episodes of the podcast on mathishard.net, and there we link to the actors, actresses, and movies that we discussed in the movie here, or pardon me, in the episode here as well. We are on Twitter and Facebook at username mathishardnet, so let us know how we're doing and check us out and follow us there. Our next episode will be released on November 3rd, when we will be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes we would make to Modern Times. So, gentlemen, I think we did a good job. We sought out to make a silent podcast. It was a little rough. We talked, so that was hard. But I think overall, you know, I think we did a pretty good job overall. I think our mustaches have stuck on. I don't know if you guys have. Mine has pretty well.
I accidentally shaved during this episode.
Oh, no.
But you did. My bowler fell off, too.
Aw, jeez. You guys ruin everything. I know. But I still love you. Until the next episode, gentlemen, may the force be with you.
And also with you.